You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and this is Book Lovers Cafe. Book Lovers Cafe is a monthly program of author interviews and book reviews with a definite local perspective. And I'm your host, Chris Wilson. Today, we're going to be talking to Gary Lemons. He's a local poet and author. He's also a yoga instructor. He's a founding manager of PTTV. In terms of yoga, he's also co-owner with his partner, Nula, of Tender Paws Yoga Studio. So a busy person, and he has just recently published or had released a new book of poetry. I've been immersed in his poetry for the last week, and it's been a considerable pleasure and very thought-provoking. And if you haven't heard the work or read the work of Gary Lemons, he's right here in our wonderful town. I'm going to ask you to look him up. Find him at Tender Paws Studio. Go down to Writer's Workshop and find his work on Anna's shelves or in both our local libraries. His most recent book is called Snake, Second Wind. This book has gotten some pretty amazing reviews. I'd like to read what Norman Duby said about it. Gary Lemons, in this heroic passage through an intense personal mythology, is working what Carl Jung might have labeled a real-time archetype, meme of the tribe in an attempt to explore the darker humus of text. It is a fabulous and brilliant extension of something like Theodore Rothke meets Philip K. Dick. Gary wants to extend our sense of the lyric, sacred aria, and yet it is all a picture book that one could lovingly bring to the children's hour. This is a wonderful book. So we'll be talking a lot about Snake, but right now I'd like to welcome Gary. Thank you so much for coming in, Gary.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure.
It's a beautiful day here, so we can forget about right now the pressures of the politics of our time and what's happening in our world. But you never forget it in your work. It's always right there, especially climate change, especially our torturous existence as human beings, really, where we are all to blame. So I'd like you to talk first about how you came into being a writer of poetry. Tell us a little about your history as a writer and the history of your life.
Well, it goes way back. If you live long enough, your vista becomes quite large. And I look back to when I was a child, and I was not very healthy, and I was consequently in the company of my grandmothers. And both of them had huge libraries, and they introduced me to their books very early. And I started reading when I was quite young, and it was always something that I just really loved. And so my first teachers were my grandmothers, and I sort of carry them with me and hope always to. It was in high school that I started to seriously think of myself as a poet. And I know that's very young. When I look back now and think, wow, I was 16 years old and calling myself a poet.
The creative juices start flowing early, though, don't
you?
They
do have to start early.
Yes,
yeah.
I believe in that.
And it's a lifetime commitment, as it's turned out for me. I sent a poem off as a junior in high school to the Paris Review, and it was unbelievably accepted. And that hooked me for for life.
Yes.
That acceptance letter was really astonishing. And even my teachers went, what, this isn't right.
No.
And then I was, and then I was sort of on the path. And I went to Breadloaf twice in Vermont and studied with some of the most amazing teachers of that time, people like John Sciardi and John Crow Ransom and Diane Wachowski and William Stafford and John Berryman. And the list goes on. I was just very, very fortunate to be at a time when these amazing writers were accessible at, in a sort of public way.
And then on to Iowa.
And then on to Iowa, where I worked with Norman Duby and Donald Justice, a brilliant,
Even I've heard of them.
Yeah, he's amazing. And I learned a lot about the formal art of writing from these people. Marvin Bell, also the National Poet Laureate, and also a resident of Port Townsend, part-time.
Between Iowa and Port Townsend,
yeah,
we share him.
Yes, we do. So again, I've been just very lucky looking back at the teachers I've had in my life, starting with my grandmother. And, you know, continuing on to this day and hopefully out into the future.
But then you left the academic life.
I chose
to not pursue your master's in fine arts or the writing in academia. And you went to work a lot of difficult and laborious jobs with your hands. And so that has influenced your work, right?
Yeah, tremendously. Yeah. I did want to get away from the academic setting. I felt stifled by it. I felt like I had taken from it, at least for that amount of time, what I needed to get from it. And I thought, wow, let's go out and see what's happening in the world. And I have to admit, I was sort of young and influenced by people like Kerouac and the Beatniks and that whole movement to get out into the geography of the real physical geography of life instead of the classroom. So yeah, I went to Bristol Bay and fished. Mm-hmm.
And you have a book called Bristol Bay.
I do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I worked high steel, and my favorite of all of my jobs was tree planting, the clear cuts of the Pacific Northwest with some of the greatest artists I've ever met, and many of them still local, like Fenn Wilcox and Michael O'Daly and Sharon Dubiago. There was just Chuck Easton, the musician.
Right. So it's kind of you can work really, really hard during the season, and then during that rainy winter time,
you can
do your creative work.
That was exactly right. We were all on unemployment during a certain part of the year while we did our work, and it was a marvelous time. And of course, the whole idea of putting back something is really in itself gratifying. And I put maybe 500,000 trees in the ground during the time I planted, and there were many, many people that put over 1 million trees back into these clear cuts. And that feels like good karma.
I recently read your early book, Fresh Horses, and this comes out of that time, I believe. And and you were also in Wyoming or Montana, North Dakota. And so the images of the horses, the native peoples, you write a lot about Chief Joseph in this book. I really loved this book.
Oh, thank you.
The images were wonderful. The story and of the struggle of the land and the native people was really wonderful to read. So I recommend that people go back to that book. Let's stop a minute. Share with our audience one of your poems.
Okay. Thank you for asking. This is from Snake 2, Second Wind. And just as a small preface, Snake is a ongoing sequential narrative divided into four books, a quartet. And the second book, Second Wind, is about the voices that are, if you will, captured in time that are fictional or mythical or rumored. They're not the actual physical beings and bodies that we associate with having a life and losing it. They're the voices that attach themselves to our lives. And these things are as real somewhere as we are here, I think. That's the presumption that everything within infinity never disappears. In the book, you'll find a lot of references to historical events as if they were current. And that's the presumption that Snake starts with. Also, Snake is will speak from a male and female perspective. Snake is neither one gender or the other, but speaks from both genders, sometimes in the same poem.
Okay, so we'll talk more about Snake after and what Snake is and represents in your work.
I just wanted to make sure that in reading the poem, if some of this came up, it was somewhat explained. This poem is called Remembering. Those old roads we walked back then remain undamaged in memory. The signs fresh, and the pavement unbuckled from passing heavy wheels. I see you smile 40 years ago, and it lights up the room today. All the candles go out. Breathing is difficult, and shadows join darkness enough to smuggle bodies out of this dimming light. That's what it is, thinks Snake. Now alone for millions of years, the past, like fossilized bones, reassembled by delirious pressures into cleaner panes of glass. Then she remembers the sky on fire, and the bombs falling, and the quivering planet as it shied like an enraged horse from the rider's spur, feels the medic's touch in the triage tent where nothing dies, not even the carnivorous rose feasting on the open wound. She stirs the pot as it cooks so nothing sticks to the bottom. Stirs, remembers everything again as the next breath bubbles to the surface and bursts into the lovely, momentary fragrance of bone.
When I listened to that poem, so many images came to mind. A pathway, an earlier time turning into an industrial road, turning into sort of an apocalyptic landscape. Mm-hmm. And then I thought about Snake. Mm-hmm. And I thought about, because now I've read a lot of your poetry. And so I see Snake as a disembodied spirit, a survivor of everything that we've gone through in history and mm-hmm. have yet to go through. Mm-hmm. Even though your work is talking about maybe a time of apocalypse or dystopian future, I feel it's very present right now. Mm-hmm. So how are you feeling about that? These must have been difficult poems to write, thinking about how the world has changed and what are we headed towards?
They are difficult to write, and the first book particularly, because I was feeling my way into the voice and the character. I can remember reading it with tears in my eyes. It was very difficult to write. Sometimes it's really hard to read. And yet so are the headlines. You wake up and look at the world news and you see the most horrible things happening to the planet, to one another. It's just impossible to look away. And unless you choose to look away, and then when you make that choice, you're complicit, I think, to some degree in what comes next. And so the premise in the Snake Quartet is that it's really critically important to look at what's really happening, even if it's difficult and unpleasant. And mm-hmm. often it is.
So in this poem that you just read, we're talking about that nothing ever really goes away, that it's exactly. always remembered. It's always perhaps existing on a different plane. Mm-hmm. We've read things, or I've read things as a non-scientist about string theory and
exactly.
about different yeah. planes of reality. So this is what this brings to mind.
It
and
is.
Perhaps you could read all of it again or a part of it again as Robert Bly does so that we can think again about what it's saying.
Okay. Just as an addendum to that, you're absolutely right. This is in, there is some information bleeding into this work from quantum physics. I have a minor in physics and I have some sort of dilettante understanding of what is impossible to understand truly. But the whole idea that realities exist within realities infinitely, which is a difficult idea to even grasp. Infinity has no boundaries. How about mm-hmm. that? And so we typically want to think of things with beginnings and end, like time, and time doesn't exist in infinity either. So, and the ending of this poem just is this whole thing about being a cooking and something bubbling up and bursting in to form, if you will, a bubble and then disappearing again, is how I see sometimes how our lives are. And we think that we only exist as this bubble or this form when we are part of an infinite process expressing itself over and over again. In form. So I'll just read the last part of it. It's called Remembering. Then she remembers the sky on fire and the bombs falling and the quivering planet as it shied like an enraged horse from the rider's spur. Feels the medic's touch in the triage tent where nothing dies, not even the carnivorous rose feasting on the open wound. She stirs the pot as it cooks, so nothing sticks to the bottom. Stirs, remembers everything again as the next breath bubbles to the surface and bursts into the lovely, momentary fragrance of bone.
I also like the way that in your poems we understand that we are all to blame and that we are all complicit. Mm-hmm. And I think that here we are in our almost paradise of Port Townsend in the Northwest, the place where people are coming to mm-hmm. escape climate change and other places. I mean, the fire's already burning. The floods are already here. The people are already dying. And so as we look out, we wonder what we can do. One of the things I think that you are doing is expressing yourself creatively, warning us and also helping us deal with what's happening. So thanks, Gary. You are listening to Book Lovers Cafe, and I'm your host, Chris Wilson. And today we are talking to Port Townsend resident, a poet here, a yoga instructor, Gary Lemons. And he is celebrating the publication of his most recent book called Snake Part 2, Second Wind. And it's only the middle of the Snake Quartet, I do believe. So let's look at another poem and talk about who is Snake. It is not obviously an actual living reptile, but where did Snake come from for you? How did this character evolve?
As you were nice enough to mention in our pre-interview discussion, it came from the book Bristol Bay. It was a voice that came out in a poem called Endgame, and it came out of a dream. And at the time it came out, I thought it was a single poem. It came out as a dream that with a voice that spoke in dialect, a very southern sort of Appalachian dialect, which a part of my family spoke in when I was growing up. So I'm familiar with that particular linguistic. And it spoke about is sort of in an apocalyptical way, and nothing else in the book was like that. And I thought, what is this? But I also felt to honor it, it came up with a certain urgency that it wanted to be expressed. So I included it in the manuscript, and the publisher really liked it, Red Hen Press, Kate Gale, particularly the wonderful publisher of Red Hen. And so I thought I was done with it. And then out of nowhere, the first book, Snake, came, or the second iteration of the voice. It came out of a dream, to go back to the end game. It came from a dream I had about the end of the world and the planet, and the conscious intention, the intelligent retribution of a planet overburdened by the activities on it, by the people inhabiting it.
Are you someone that wakes up in the middle of the night and writes things down?
Oh, I do. In fact, Bristol Bay, which is a lengthy 30-page poem in the middle of the book, I woke up in the middle of the night and wrote in one setting about it 6 hours from midnight to 6 a.m. And I had no paper, and I didn't want to break the voice, so I wrote it in the margin of paperback books I had been reading that were stacked up by the bed. And it took like 3 books to write the poem.
That's a great story.
And I still have those books. And some of them I can't even read anymore. I mean, what I wrote, but it was, yeah.
Yeah, because that fades, and that paper kind of is not the best paper.
No, it's blurred.
Not archival quality.
Yeah. So.
All right. Let's read another poem. Back to Snake 2.
Okay, this is also from Second Wind, a little different. It's called Zen Lipstick. Once Snake pulled her hose halfway up her calf, then gave up looking available. She knows no one looks good when the only light comes from the stars in late December through a window broken by vandals last fall. Still, she goes to the mirror to put on fresh berry juice over lips puffy from nettle cream borrowed from her sister, who goes among boys as if they were able to mount her in a personal album. What a life, never knowing how beautiful you are until someone sets themselves on fire just so you can see.
Different snake. Okay, different snake. So where did this poem come from? What made you think of this?
Well, I know it's sort of a cop-out to say this, but I'm never completely sure, because many, many times when I'm writing these snake poems, I feel like I'm a secretary, an amanuensis for snake. And so these poems just come out, and it's changed my whole writing style from an academic writing style where I had an intention that I then worked with and developed and edited into a reasonable facsimile of the original intention. I'm no longer putting up barriers anywhere when the narrative flow comes. I'm just writing it down, and if it's not reasonable afterwards, I usually don't keep it, but oftentimes I find there's something in there that's important to me, and I'm surprised that it came.
Okay, so what I'm thinking is stockings halfway up, kind of an old soul, and like, what the hell? What's the point now? Like, forget the stocking thing. And then the broken window in the middle in December. Again, we're reaching the end. It's the end of life. It's, you know, the fire is still there. The desire to be attractive. Vanity never goes away. What the hell? And then, you know, the berry stained lips. I love that. And then just the fact that everyone is beautiful.
Exactly.
Everyone is beautiful. And the fire is there when two souls, you know, connect with one another. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what I was thinking, Gary.
Well, I appreciate that. And I would perhaps add to that, and didn't realize it until I just talked to you, that the idea that oftentimes we can't see ourselves as who we are until someone else illuminates us in such a way that we're able to clearly see either our gifts or not. And as far as the stockings rolled halfway up the leg, it's funny you say that, because we just had a yoga workshop last weekend, and afterwards we went to Sweet Lorette's, and there was a young woman in there with her stockings, fishnet stockings, which you don't see anymore. She was in her early 20s. And one of the women my age in the workshop commented on it and said, "Wow, you don't see that. I used to wear that when I was your age." And she goes, and the woman my age said, "That's so retro." And the young woman said, "Yeah, exactly. That's what we're going for.
Always looking for vintage. Yeah. Always looking for vintage. Okay. We're talking to Gary Lemons about his work, about his character. I don't know if character's quite the word, but the Snake Quartet. And so where are you going in the future now, Gary? What's going to happen? What's going to be published next?
Okay. The Snake character, that's a great word, has sort of taken over my creative planet, if you will, over the last 6 or 7 years. And so there's two more books in the quartet, Hunger Sutras and Original Grace, which are both written and under contract and will come out in two-year increments. Hunger Sutras in 2018 and Original Grace in 2020.
Okay, Hunger Sutras, what a fabulous title.
Oh,
I love it.
You.
And Original Grace.
Original Grace.
Okay.
Which is sort of trying to wrap all of this up with a hopeful ribbon around it.
Let's hope in 2018 we feel that way.
Yeah, really. Well, it's both. It always is both. I'm a non-dualist. So the reason I'm more witnessing what is the difficult part of our evolution is because there's so many people looking at the light, and most people want to look away from the darkness at the light. And as a non-dualist, they come entangled. They're equally present. And so if we fail to see both of them, we're missing out on half of the perspective of our existence, I think. Doesn't mean we have to invite them in, but it's important to witness, I think. So. And then in 2017, next spring, I have a new book, non-snake, I have to say that, coming out, called The Weight of Light. I'm very excited about that. That will debut at American Writers and Poets in Washington, D.C. next year. And in the fall, a book called El Día de los Muertos, which is, of course, Day of the Dead.
The Day of the Dead.
And that will come out in time for that celebration. So there's two books next year.
That is very exciting.
Yeah,
that is very
totally exciting.
I'm stoked. Right, a lot of work, and it's all coming to the light, and will be available to us. And so you'll be around doing readings for us.
I will
of
be
this new work.
Busier than I've ever been.
And really, debuting in D.C. at American Authors and Writers. Congratulations!
Thank you.
I love going to D.C. I have young family there that I visit now quite frequently, and it's become such a vibrant city with a lot of art and beauty to it. With that, I don't, you know, it's always been there, but it's very visible now.
I'm a native. I was born there.
So you see the differences.
Yeah, totally.
Port Townsend is a town for poets. Mm. What do you have to say about that? How have we evolved, and where are we now, and where can people discover poetry here in Port Townsend?
What you're doing is just awesome, so they can discover it right here with you. But I moved here in 1977. There was a little place called the Ace of Cups, and it was up on Lawrence Street.
So sad. I missed it.
So incredible. And people like Connie Welch were so involved in supporting the poetry scene here, which was outrageous. And I read there when I first got off the ferry with Sam Hamill and Sharon Dubiago and a bunch of local people. And there was a really vibrant poetry scene here in the late 70s and early 80s, with places like the Ed Cain Gallery and Russell Jakewood Gallery offering places to read. Then there was sort of a long period where it was a little bit like the dark ages for poetry
the 80s.
In town. Yeah. The disco days.
Yeah, right.
Of poetry. And although it was still happening in people's living rooms, it just didn't really have a venue. And then, you know, the Unitarian Church began to really open its doors up for this, especially after 9/11. Northwind Gallery came along, and Bill Mahoney put together this wonderful mm-hmm. reading series, which has been ongoing now for a long time. And then Peter and Anna Quinn took over, created the Writers' Workshop, and then bought Imprint and moved into that. And that they've been a gift to the community as well. So we're in what I would consider a renaissance for poetry mm-hmm. in Port Townsend right now. Mm-hmm. It's great to see.
I'd also like to mention, for people that are writing poetry at home, there are workshops for you at Writers' Workshop.
Yes.
QUF also has writing circles. Pippa's has a mm-hmm. monthly reading. And both of our libraries are bringing poets in to read, and also have Poetry in the Round the last Friday of the month. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of places, yeah. and that's exciting.
And of course, if you're younger and want to get out your work, there's Slam Poetry at the Uptown and mm-hmm. a couple other places.
The Boiler Room.
The Boiler Room. Mm-hmm. Which is wonderful because it's non-alcoholic, and then there's the Poorhouse. There's I mean, it's like I say, it's a renaissance. People are reading and writing at an unbelievable rate in our town.
Okay. Well, on that happy note, well, thank you again, Gary, for stopping by today. Today we've been talking to Gary Lemons, and this is Book Lovers Cafe, 91.9 FM here in Port Townsend. And I encourage you to find poetry where you find it and pick up a copy of Snake Second Wind and also Snake, and look for a future work by Gary. Please join me next time to talk more about books and authors. I'm your host, Chris Wilson. I'd like to thank Larry Stein, Mike Schlechter, and all the poets that reside here in wonderful Port Townsend. Thank you for the supporters who make this radio station possible. We'll talk again.